It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Horrifying scenes continue to play out in Italian hospitals as the death toll there is at almost 5,500, the highest mortality rate anywhere in the world. Italy has also got about 60,000 positive cases. It is already a country in strict lockdown, but even more draconian measures are being taken in an attempt to slow the spread of the virus. Travel within the country has been banned. All non-essential business activity will be suspended. And the situation across Europe continues to be alarming as cases continue to accelerate. Spain's death toll is at 1,720. The country's health minister said on Sunday that another 394 people had died in just 24 hours. The government there planning to extend the state of emergency for at least another 2 weeks with police patrols and checkpoints across the country. Spain has the second worst outbreak in Europe after Italy. And world leaders don't seem to be immune. In Germany, Chancellor Angela Merkel is in quarantine after a doctor who tested her for the flu tested positive for coronavirus. It's unclear whether she has it or not. And although China still has the largest number of confirmed cases, the pandemic there has largely moved to Europe. The World Health Organization says there are more cases being reported in Europe than there were in China at the height of the epidemic.
All right, that's a report from NBC London. We've spent most of our time this last few weeks talking about the United States and the effect of the coronavirus on us, both in terms of our finances, but also our health. But compared to what's happening here in terms of numbers, certainly you have heard, and I should tell you, that Europe has followed the wave of China and has been suffering tremendously. But what does that mean? You've heard a lot about Italy. We talked about Italy a lot last week. But what about Spain? What about the other countries that are the European Union? What's happening there now? Why is it more, why are they being hit harder than the United States? How many deaths are the statistics kind of following, comporting with what we're finding here? Are there any cures? How are the leaders responding? We want to talk about all of that today, because many of us have friends and family, and certainly our roots are European, most of us. And so I have asked someone who hasn't joined us for a very long time. His name is Soren Kern. He's a senior fellow at Gatestone Institute, and Gatestone is based in New York City. The founder of Gatestone is Nina Rosenwald, but the chairman of the board for a number of years when I started becoming involved with Gatestone was Ambassador John Bolton, former ambassador, and now you know he was a former national security advisor for President Trump. Gatestone has done some wonderful things, and I have to tell you, I depend a lot on their writing and reporting around the entire world for much of the information that I use. And Soren is one of those writers that I look to. Soren is American, but he lives in Spain, and he's joining us from Spain today. Soren, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Soren, let's talk about you just for a second. All right, let's talk about your circumstances and why you are in Spain. Why are you in Spain?
Well, first of all, we love this country. We love Europe. I've lived most of my adult life here, probably more than 25 to 30 years professionally here. And we had an opportunity to come back a couple of years ago, and we did that. So I feel it's very important for me as I'm writing and specialized about Europe to have a base here. And from this base, it really allows me to move about the continent to try to, you know, have a first-hand view of what's going on.
Yes, and Soren, as a matter of fact, to get very personal, look, I'm starting it with this. I'm starting it with a personal note because I want people to know kind of who you are, and then your writing will spring from who you are. You recently had the coronavirus yourself, didn't you?
Well, I got very sick. I can't confirm that it was a coronavirus, but I was very sick and I had all the symptoms. It was maybe 4 weeks ago. And if there is ever in the future a test that can tell whether or not those antibodies are in my body, I will try to do that to confirm. Because it was a very, very unusual flu. It was very, very, it was like a pneumonia. It's something that I've never experienced before in my life. So now with all these cases here in Europe, I'm beginning to think that maybe what I had was a little bit more serious than just a flu.
Soren, my understanding is that one of the most contagious places for coronavirus to flourish is in families. So has this affected your family? And are you seeing that? I want to talk about Spain first. Are you seeing that in Spain? Are you seeing families have outbreaks? We've had some of that in the United States.
Yeah, I think what we see here is the outbreaks in most of Europe and in Spain as well are in the large population centers where there's a very high population density. And so that's really one of the reasons why these quarantines are in place in Italy, northern Italy, and Spain, as a way to try to separate people. Now, if someone within a family is tested positive, they're essentially supposed to quarantine in a separate part of the house so that they don't infect the other families. But it's really impossible at this. There's just not enough information to really know how many of these people are being infected through family, transfers of this virus.
Yeah. Would you say, we're speaking now, I need to say that this will be airing a few days after you and I are currently right now recording this. So as of today, would you say that there is, they say that viruses are charted on a bell curve. Is there any sense in which the apex of the bell curve has been surpassed, like in Spain, as I understand it, I think Spain is behind Italy, but it's the second hardest hit. Do you have any sense that there's any kind of let up, or is it getting worse?
Yeah, well, it's definitely getting worse. We've been in quarantine here in Spain for 11 days now. And so the studies that I've seen by the University of Valencia and other, scientific studies say that the peak of the curve is going to come between April 11 and April 21. So we're talking about maybe April 16. That's what the forecast is right now. So we're really talking about a continual increase in Spain for at least another 3 weeks. And even then, when you're on the other side behind the bell curve, the numbers continue to grow, but just not at the same rate. Mm-hmm. So my hunch is that we're going to be with this for 2 or 3 months. I don't really know how you can quarantine a society for that long. But the fear really is that once the quarantine is ended and the people can go back to their normal lives, that then there will be a second wave of infections. So really, until there's a vaccine to deal with this, there's going to always be a danger of new waves of infection.
I don't think, at least according to reports out of China, if you can trust them, I don't think they are experiencing a second wave. And so I just wonder what your thoughts are about the fact that that might not be the case.
Yes. First of all, I would not trust any of the information coming out of China at this point. Just this morning, I read a study that shows that there is actually new infections coming in. The Chinese government is saying that the infections that are appearing are foreign cases. That's their terminology. But it really is Chinese people who are coming back to China from Europe and from other parts of the world. And so just today, I read that there were 39 cases just in Wuhan. So I think that, we have to really take what the Chinese people are saying, what the Chinese government is saying, with a grain of salt. I really cannot believe that this is completely ended in China.
To affirm what you just said, I read this morning that records for cell phones show that the Chinese have, I think it was 20, they've lost 21 million phone users on the records, mm-hmm. The companies. Suddenly, 21 million people have dropped off, are not using phones anymore, not paying for them, which is a very curious stat. Doesn't mean necessarily what it seems to mean, and yet it is. It just kind of proves the point that we don't really quite know. Let's talk for a second. I know that Spain is close to your heart because that's where you're raising your family, But let's talk to Italy. I talk about Italy because they are the hardest hit in Europe. Do you know what the current stats are on in Italy of deaths and people that are infected?
Sure. In Italy, the number of infected confirmed cases is well over 60,000 as of this morning, and roughly 5,500 deaths. Wow. I read a scientific study this morning on the cases in Italy, and really due to the lack of testing, it's believed that the actual number of cases in Italy is 10 times higher. So we're really talking, you know, about maybe 600,000, 700,000 people at this point who are infected in Italy, and only a tenth of those are known. And I've read similar studies of the case in Spain that, 40,000 cases in Spain, but the actual number is probably 10 times higher. So we're really talking about a massive outbreak here in Europe, and a lot of the cases are symptomatic, but they're still contagious. So people might not show up with the symptoms, but they're still infecting other people through their daily interaction. And so that's really the case that's happening, you know, in Italy and Spain right now.
Soren, this is not new news to you, and it's certainly not new news to my audience, but according to what I have read, and I think most of the so-called experts, again, I use my fingers for quotes, are saying that children are not, there are some, but hardly any children are dying from it. Some of them are getting infected, but that especially like in Italy, the average age of the person dying is something like 80 years old, but not infections. Infections are all over the map in Italy, but the deaths. Can you confirm that?
Yeah, well, I think the area where we're the main outbreak in northern Italy, the demographics in that area, in that part of the country, there are a lot of elderly people. What I can say is in Spain, there are also predominantly elderly people, but we are seeing an increasing number of cases of doctors and police officers and, you know, politicians, even people who are, you know, in their 40s and 50s who are physically fit, who have no other illnesses, who are also succumbing to this disease. So it's clear that predominantly due to demographics, it's affecting an older age group, but most definitely other age groups are also being affected by this.
Well, they're getting the virus, but I was speaking of deaths. I was speaking of the stats on the deaths, and
I don't have the statistics on the deaths, but I was referring to deaths, particularly here in Spain. A lot of people in the age groups of 50. Between 50 and 60 are also among the dead, and many of these people are public servants.
So you were talking about deaths when you said doctors and
yes,
policemen. Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Well,
there are roughly 4,000 just healthcare workers in Spain are infected, and every day you're reading that more and more of these people are succumbing to their illness. So we're really at the very beginning of this problem, at least here in Spain.
Well, how about in terms of the shutdown? Now, we're in the middle now in the United States. By contrast, we don't have a problem. I know we do, but I'm just saying the numbers and the comparisons are really kind of unfair because you guys, it just sounds horrific what you are going through. But we're grappling now with some of the financial challenges that you guys are, the Europeans are facing as well, and that is when you shut all of commerce down. And you shut out the ability for people to work, it has devastating effects. We have to take a break, Soren. But when we come back, what are you seeing in that regard? How are people sustaining themselves in Spain and in Italy and other countries? And plus, we want to broaden our discussion to the other European countries because there's a lot more to say. I've read a lot of what you've been writing, and I want to make sure that we talk about borders and what some of the mitigating factors are for Europe that's making it become the target, such a heavy target of this coronavirus. My guest is Soren Kern. He's a senior fellow at Gatestone Institute, and this is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
here in the Madrid region, where we're seeing around 40% of all cases. And that obviously puts a tremendous amount of pressure on the local healthcare services. Now, the government has tried to take measures to alleviate that, not just here in Madrid, but elsewhere across the country, for example, by nationalising private hospitals. But it does seem to be a big problem here in Madrid in particular. Also, we have seen a number of outbreaks of the coronavirus in retirement homes. Now, elderly people are obviously a particularly high-risk group, so that could be contributing as well to that relatively high death rate. And in addition to that, there has been some criticism of Spain when it comes to its testing for coronavirus, that the testing hasn't been done soon enough, that it hasn't been rigorous enough, and therefore that when people are being hospitalised, that it's that much more difficult to cure them and indeed to save their lives.
That's a report from the BBC. Sandy Rios with you. My guest is Soren Kern, who is a resident of Spain, he and his family. And he is a senior fellow for the Gatestone Institute, which I have tremendous, tremendous regard for. And Soren has been writing a series of articles, which, by the way, we will post on our Facebook page. Coronavirus, Europe on lockdown, coronavirus, Europe's open borders system faces collapse, and then an article about Germany whipping up anti-Americanism in the face of this. So we're going to talk about all of that as we have time here. Soren, I know that people have not been able to work. You've been on lockdown for, what did you say, 12 days?
Yes, today's the 12th day.
Yeah, so how are people surviving? Is the government giving money to people? I know it's a more socialized system than we have, but that's what they're talking about doing here for people. What are they doing in Spain and Italy to sustain people?
Yeah, the government is making a lot of promises to pay salaries, to withhold, and they're giving permission to not make mortgage payments. It's really impossible for me to understand how Spain is going to pay for this. They've made promises of up to 20% of GDP. So the only thing that I can understand is that the European Central Bank is going to start printing a lot of euros to try to pay for all of these, flood liquidity into the financial system, because it's not just Spain, it's also Italy and Germany and the UK. Well, the UK is not part of the Eurozone, but all of the European countries are making these massive pledges, financial pledges, to help the societies through this. And it's really impossible for me to understand at this point how this is going to get paid for. You know, Europe has traditionally very sluggish growth. It's behind the United States because of the large number of regulations here, and essentially it's very hard for me to see how the Europeans are going to pay for all these promises.
Yes, well, that's kind of the fight we're having now here. It's like, yeah, that looks good on paper and it wins elections, but you can't just create money out of nothing, and there's a point at which governments will break down, and any kind of financial system will break down when there's such a strain on it. Let's talk about other countries besides Italy and Spain, which are hard hit. Are there any countries, what are the other notable countries that are being affected in terms of the sheer numbers?
Well, Germany is the third most affected country in Europe at this point. The numbers in the last couple of days have really exploded in that country. There's a lot of criticism of Chancellor Merkel that she was very slow to address this problem. It's essentially across the board. All of the European countries, the leaders, have been very slow to recognize what was going on in China and to take preparatory action. I think in Germany, there has been a reluctance, partly because of the economic impact of, shutting people into their homes. And I also think that with Germany's history and with the Nazi party, the sort of autocratic control, totalitarian control that they took of the society in the Second World War, that there's a real reticence on the part of the German government to take extreme measures unless it's absolutely necessary. So definitely Germany is behind the ball on this. The numbers are really increasing at a very, very rapid rate, just a few thousand behind Spain at this point, and probably by tomorrow, Germany will be the second most affected country in the European Union.
I'm going to say something. I hope this is not offensive to you. It might be, Soren, but I don't mean for it to be. I just want to know. No one dares to say this, but I find myself wondering if the open borders and the lack of restraint and immigration from all kinds of countries. I think of Spain. I mean, I think of, Italy and their southern border and all of the immigrants from really all over the country, all over the world, various countries in Africa, various Muslim countries in the Middle East, without the same kinds of standards, Western standards of sanitation and cleanliness. I do find myself wondering if this, and Germany too, for heaven's sake, if this hasn't factored into the growth of this disease. Is that an unfair observation to you?
No, I don't think it's unfair. The only thing right now is that we don't really have clear statistics on who is among the affected populations. Mm-hmm. There are not, in most countries, there are not breakdowns into male or female, and there are not breakdowns into age groups. And so it's very difficult at this point to really understand that dynamic. But I think that what has happened in Europe is that, the open border system is so precious. It's so much the basis of the European Union and this European federalism project that European countries were very, very reluctant to close the borders when they should have. I think President Trump did the right thing by closing shutting off the flights from China at a very early point. The Europeans did not do that. And even as of last week, there were still flights coming into Germany from Iran, which is really also a very largely affected country.
Yes.
So just by the open borders dogma here in Europe, it's really allowed this thing to explode into really an uncontrollable situation.
Soren, let's talk about that for a second, because you know Americans are notoriously, let's say, illiterate on things outside their country. So let's talk about the obvious, what you know very well because you live in Spain, that the European Union, as you have said, but I'm going to put it in more detail, the European countries entered into this, what they were trying to kind of imitate, Roman Empire, some would say, but also what they would say just trying to economically compete with the United States by joining together. And one of the big benefits was to do away with passports and be able to pass between countries easily, because before it was like, 50 United States separated by borders where you had to have different passports and pass through. And the different languages, they adopted one currency, and they called these countries that participated in this, this has to be a German name, Schengen area. And you're right. Of all the leaders in Europe who have really pushed that to the limit, it seems to be Angela Merkel to me. So your point Well, I just was going to say, at times I've thought she was just out of her mind by her embrace of this, putting Germans in danger when there was such an invasion of Muslim young men of warring age during the time of ISIS flooding into the borders of Germany. I just thought she was out of her mind. But you think you did touch on this. You said because of her roots, she was raised in East Germany, that she has a revulsion about any kind of race or whatever, even the evaluations of people based on categories of race or ethnicity. Is there a better way to finesse that? And just to explain why she does not want to open the close the borders.
Yeah, I think the whole European project started after the Second World War when the Europeans, were rebuilding. And there's always been a resentment of the United States and of its power and its economic influence. So the idea of the European Union has always been, it started as an economic union, as a customs union, but the idea has always been a political union. And that's gradually where this continent is going, towards a political union. And so Angela Merkel and a lot of people like her believe that in order to avoid another scenario like World War II, you have to bind all these countries so closely together that that war is not an option.
Yeah.
And so I think that is really the fundamental reason why Angela Merkel has been so reluctant to close the German borders. I think also she underestimated the consequences of the migration crisis in 2015. And like all politicians, there's a very great reluctance to admit that you were wrong and that you made a mistake, because that would require accountability. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of factors going on here. But I think the really interesting thing now is that the Schengen system, the open border system, has essentially collapsed within a period of 2 or 3 days. And so every single country in Europe has now put border control. And it's very, very difficult to move now from, you know, from Spain to France or from Spain to Portugal or from Spain to the UK. So we really see that there's a great deal of mythology behind all of this European federalism. But when there really is a crisis, the knee-jerk reaction of the European countries is to go back to nationalism. And that's exactly what President Trump has always said. So I think that we're really seeing the true, you know, the true nature of the European Union in this crisis.
Isn't it interesting? Because honestly, who would have thought, I wouldn't have, that the European Union in such short order would be struggling to hold itself together. It seemed like such a radical idea that was working so well. And now you have, you know, England, Great Britain, pulling out of the European Union, what, a month ago, maybe time flies with the news cycle that we have. And now you have Angela Merkel falling into disrepute because of her open borders. I'm surprised she's still in power. Actually, I thought there was going to be an election, Soren, where she was not doing very well. What's happened with that?
Yeah, so far in the German political system, there's not really been an alternative leader to come up. And so basically, she is sort of there until the next elections. I think the next election cycle is in 2 years from now. She had, you know, she had selected a person to be her, you know, to take over.
Yes.
And that person failed greatly.
Yes.
And so I think right now what we're seeing with this coronavirus crisis is a lot of potential new people in Germany getting media attention. And maybe, you know, the health minister or some of the other people that are dealing with this will eventually emerge as successor to Angela Merkel.
We should say, too, Soren, that Germany is the strongest, richest country in the European Union. I don't know if it's the largest population-wise, but it is the powerhouse. And as a response to this, you wrote an article about how American anti-Americanism is being whipped up in Germany. Now, that's it's kind of a joining together of a lot of different circumstances. They really do hate President Trump's nationalistic. They kind of, I think, I don't know if they openly compare him to Hitler. I'm sure they think of him in that way. That's what the American left does. They conflate nationalism with the Hitler-like desire for power, which is not at all what President Trump is talking about. But you talk about an article that has gotten a lot of wings in German press and also in American press that's just not true. Can you tell us about that, kind of to deflect things from Angela Merkel?
Sure. Well, there was a rumor placed in one of the main newspapers in Germany that President Trump was trying to buy a German pharmaceutical company for $1 billion. But that it's a pharmaceutical company that's working on a vaccine for coronavirus. And they said basically that the stipulation was that that virus could only be used for Americans in the United States. So obviously, the way the press goes in America, the press goes the same here in Europe. And that article went viral all over the continent, saying basically that President Trump is trying to poach European scientists and wants to keep the virus, the vaccine, just for Americans. I think it's very interesting is that Chinese companies are also, I don't know if the story is true with President Trump. I mean, I doubt very much whether it's true that he wants to just keep the vaccine for Americans only. But Chinese government is also trying to purchase German pharmaceutical companies, but there's not been any of the same outrage. In fact, what you see in the German press, just what I'm reading this morning, is that a lot of people are talking about a new world order coming out of this pandemic, and that China is going to be the model for the rest of the world to follow.
Oh, boy.
So it's very, very strange here in Europe that they would rather give up on the liberties and on, you know, the values that has made the West what it is. They would rather give that up than follow President Trump, you know, the leadership of the United States. They would rather follow the leadership of China. So you really see Trump derangement syndrome here in Europe as well, on a very, very large scale among the elites in Europe. And it's all because of the issue of globalization, globalism versus nationalism. And President Trump has really identified that as one of the core problems in international affairs today. And there are a lot of people in Europe who appreciate President Trump. When people are finally able to hear him, translations of his actual speeches and things, there are very, very large numbers of people, even here in Spain, who really appreciate President Trump and his leadership, and particularly this message about the return to nationalism as opposed to globalism. Mm-hmm. And so the European elites hate that message because that is a repudiation of everything that they've been working for, you know, since the end of the Second World War.
Yes, it's really true, Soren. Going back even to the foundation of the United Nations, of course, after the Second World War, they did want to break down national identities and the old stories of the various countries. It's really a common thread between American elites and European elites. But the shocking thing, I'm with you, is why they will bow their knee to China, who is a totally different entity. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when we return. My guest is Soren Kern, Senior Fellow at Gatestone Institute. Fascinating discussion about what's happening with Europe and the coronavirus. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
That has to be one of my favorite clips as a result of this virus. That's in Italy, and that's a group of people in a neighborhood. They live in apartments, and they're leaning out of their windows, and spontaneously they start to sing. You hear the dog barking. And I think the point of it is that, of course, no matter what the elites or the governments are doing with people, all around the world, there are people that are rising to the occasion, helping each other, learning things about themselves, and I'm hoping actually acknowledging God maybe in Europe in a way they have not done in decades. Soren Kern is my guest. He's a senior fellow at Gatestone Institute. He lives in Spain. His heart is in Spain. His children are in Spain. Soren, are you seeing anything like that in Spain? Are you seeing some people rise to the occasion in ways you might not have expected?
Sure. I think this is really bringing people together on a national scale. Every night at 8 o'clock, at 8 p.m., everybody opens their windows and they clap and they sing and they essentially are saying thank you to the healthcare workers and to the police officers who are, you know, keeping us safe. I think people are also beginning to realize the inefficiencies of public medicine and of the social welfare state. People here in Spain in particular pay very high taxes, and they're seeing in times of crisis that the government is not prepared, that the hospitals don't have the equipment that they should have. There are no masks. So I think basically that after this is all over, there's going to be a real reassessment, I think, of politics in Europe. And I think that this there is a silver lining. I hate to say that, and because we don't like to see these people dying over this virus, but I think that when this is all over, I think this nation, the Spanish country, the country of Spain will be much stronger and much more united. So right now it's a very divided country because of separatist groups in the Basque country and in Catalonia, sort of like a divide between the extreme left and, you know, many of the similar things that we're seeing in the United States. But I think this really has the potential to bring this country together. I really, really hope that that happens.
Soren, I'm asking you this question, recognizing this, what I'm going to ask you and your answer is not related to your work at Gatestone. This is you, Soren Kern, a person, because you and I've talked privately before, and I seem to remember that you were a Christian like I am. And so I'm just curious, off the record, an un-Gatestone question is, are you seeing any kind of a spiritual awakening around people? Are people beginning to ask deep questions? Are there opportunities like that that you might not have seen? Because my experience in Europe, and I've been there lots, and my son lives in Scotland, actually, is that there is such a hardness of heart and a deadness toward anything spiritual that sometimes I wonder what's going to penetrate that. So that's a long question. But are you seeing any kind of signs of sort of a spiritual quickening, people listening and looking for God?
Yeah, I am not seeing that at all. My wife and I have discussed this. Maybe this could be something that helps people in Europe and in Spain to focus more on their relationship with the Lord and on eternal matters. That definitely has not happened so far. This country is so post-Christian. We're talking about two or three generations of post-Christian mentality and ideology in the school systems, and essentially a Catholic Church that has really lost influence and credibility for many different reasons. So I really don't see at this point that this crisis is really going to draw people closer to the Lord. I was actually reading the other day in the book of Revelation about even after the trumpet judgments and the bowl judgments, that even after all of these judgments, the people on the earth are still cursing God and refusing to bow the knee to Christ. So I think the hardness of heart is really, the Lord can break it, obviously, but it doesn't seem that it's at that point yet.
Soren, it's amazing you should mention that, because it hasn't been that long ago. I was also reading that passage in Revelation, and it might have even happened twice. It's not like just a passing phrase about things got bad and then they still didn't repent. It's a long series of horrors, and plagues and other things that God sends, where it's just horrific. And then it says very clearly that they still did not repent. They just got angry. And I believe it happens twice. And I remember reading that not long ago and thinking, how could that be? And yet, I've seen with my own eyes the blank stares, the hollow response. It's hard to explain to Americans because we're not there yet. We still have so many churches and serious Christians. We do still have that. And so there is although things are changing here. But it's hard to imagine a post-Christian Europe for people that haven't been there and tried to even mention the name of God, the hostility and just the dead, not hostility anymore, just dead to it, dead to it, I think would be the better explanation. All right, so...
Now, let me just give you a really quick illustration that when President Trump, a few weeks ago, when he declared a National Day of Prayer and said that America as a nation always reaches out to God in times of trouble, that received universal mockery here in Europe. There are some Catholics and some people who are believers in Christ who were very encouraged by President Trump's message, but on the general level, in the newspapers, in the media, and among government, that really was greeted with mockery. So that just sort of shows you the state of affairs in Europe at this point.
You know what? It was also greeted with mockery by the American left. Yeah, it was. So we're seeing, it makes me sad. Gosh, it makes me sad to hear you say that. But let's talk for a second about practical things. Your healthcare system, you mentioned it. And I did, of course, think that part of the reason is certainly in Spain and Italy and Spain and other countries, even Great Britain, is that the socialized medical system, the government medical system, was already straining. Certainly in Great Britain it was. Straining under the load of, you just can't give everybody good health care for free. Just can't do it. And so I would just love to know, more than your general comment, how are you seeing that affect the outbreak of the virus? What does that look like when it breaks down?
Well, there are very long lines trying to get into hospital for all of the non-essential surgeries have been canceled. And in November, I read the latest report in November of last year was that there were over 700,000 surgeries waiting to be had on a waiting list in the Spanish public healthcare system. So this predates this crisis, but this crisis really has brought it to light in a way that most Spanish people haven't seen before. My family, we have a private insurance because it's a very good private system here. And it's very interesting that all of the socialists, the socialist communist coalition government here, all of these people who are always complaining about private medicine, all of those who have tested positive for coronavirus have opted to go to the private hospitals. So it just shows you really that in times of trouble, that even the communists and the anti-capitalists will still choose the private over the public. And the general public has seen the hypocrisy. And so this is something that people are not going to forget for very, very soon.
Well, you know, Soren, that's not a change in pattern. It's always been the case that the totalitarians want to control you, but they want to have the best. What they talk about is best for you is not best for them, whether it was the leaders of the Politburo or the Communist Party in Russia or China or they always had a different set of values and rules for themselves. I think of the Cubans also. I mean, it's just, it is the pattern among totalitarian governments that the elite, I think of Kim Jong-il, I remember being in North Korea on 9/11 of 2001 and learning a lot about, he was at the time the president, about how he would have special foods flown in when the people were starving. Just a separate set of rules, a separate set of conduct. You think of the mayor of New York, de Blasio, shutting down the city but going to the gym himself and being caught and saying, well, I have to work out because I have so much responsibility. That's a small thing by comparison. Still, it's a great illustration of what they have in mind for you and us, and it is not the same thing as they have in mind for themselves. Soren, you are watching closely what's going on in the United States. I'm sure you are, as much as you can. So what are you seeing here from your vantage point that we need to be aware of? Just your concerns about the president and the decisions he's having to make.
Yeah, I think that President Trump is under tremendous pressure with two conflicting problems. And one of them is you're trying to contain the number of people who are getting infected and who are going to die. And at the same time, you don't want to destroy the economy and the economic base. In America, you know, the what gives America the ability to project military power, the basis of superpower status is really the economic functioning of the country. And if America doesn't get back to work fast, I mean, I'm talking about in a couple of weeks, I don't see how an economy like the United States can be shut down for a month or more if this virus spreads all over the United States. And so I'm really concerned about that issue, that, the stability of the currency, the stability of the economy, because if something were to happen to the United States, that would really open up the door for the pro-China faction, all the groups that want to take away individual liberties and want socialist control over the economies and the people. So I think what's at stake here really is something very huge. We're really talking about the future of the way that society is organized. And so I do hope that President Trump, that there's some kind of a vaccine that can come out of this, or some kind of some medicines that can help people deal with the symptoms until a vaccine becomes available. Because America really does, just for the sake of the world, for the sake of world stability, really needs to lead. And that's my number one concern right now, apart from the issue of the loved ones who are getting sick and all the human impact.
Well, I think there's no question. Gosh, as we watch him, Soren, the pressure on him and the few people around him, there are tons of us in Washington who support what he's doing. Well, not tons. there's so much opposition and so much hatred for him by people inside. It's unbelievable, the pressure, but we are continuing to surround and try to support him because we understand that this is so much greater than just one man. He's the tip of the spear. He is our champion right now. And he I think in many ways, as you said, he's the champion for the world right now, for people that just want to be free and want to live their lives and live them, in a fair way, loving their families. Let's talk about the influence of China, because we really didn't stay on that very long. My understanding is that part of the reason Italy was so greatly affected is because they've been so They've worked very closely with China, and thousands of Chinese have come in, nationals have come into Italy and started companies and worked with people. And one of the reasons that Italy was so, this is a theory, one of the reasons that Italy was so strongly affected was that they're so interwoven with the Chinese. Is that your perspective also, and that, does that apply to other European countries?
Well, yeah, the Chinese expat community in every European city is huge. Where we're living, very, very large Chinese community in Madrid. It's huge. So there's that. I think really the problem was that the Italian government did not shut down the flight from China into Italy. And that allowed infected people to come from China into Italy, infect other people. And by the time this virus, the extent of this virus was detected, it was too late.
Yes.
And so again, I think that that is really the crux of the problem is the failure to close the borders, the failure. I read an article the other day by an Italian political leader who said that the reason why the Italian government was very worried about shutting off the flights from China was because of political correctness, because they did not want to be perceived as racist.
Yes, and so that's what happened with Germany, too. So, Soren, I have to interrupt you, but this is just fascinating stuff. And we are watching the whole world shift in front of our eyes and under our feet. Meanwhile, my listeners and I will be pledging to pray for Spain, for Italy, for our friends in Europe, and that especially that God, people would actually not harden their hearts and turn to God in this crisis. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.